The InStyleOwen podcast is brought to you by Cybionics, an emerging CGM brand that focuses on simplifying how individuals aged 18 and above monitor and control their blood sugar levels. Upon becoming available on the market, the Cybionics GS1 CGM has helped users worldwide navigate the complexities of diabetes management with more confidence and peace of mind. Thanks to Cybionics, now more people are able to view and share their real-time glucose data, receive customizable glucose alarms, and generate full AGP reports, all directly from an intuitive Cybionics app, empowering them with the necessary information to make better decisions about their health. Cybionics combines data accuracy and comfort of wear, which is important to us all, with a feature-rich app. The 14-day scanning-free and calibration-free Cybionics GS1 CGM aims to deliver reliable, seamless diabetes management experiences. For more, check out cybionicscgm.com. Welcome back to part two of this episode. I really hope you enjoyed part one. Now let's get back into it. So how does it look, Chris, in terms of, obviously the UK is doing this massive rollout, which is amazing to hear, because even financially, although I would imagine it's costing a lot of money up front, down the line it'll be saving a lot of money if there's less complications and less hospital visits, etc., etc. So it's an investment in itself, but obviously not just a financial investment, it actually helps people's lives, more importantly. Let me just put that out. But how does it look, Chris, in terms of the reality around when the majority of people can have access to this thing? Like, if I want one in the UK, do I get one in 3 weeks? Do I get one in 6 months? How does it look?
That's where it all becomes rather interesting. And equally, the announcement from the NHS last week was just for England. And obviously there are health as a form of government, if you like, in the United Kingdom is devolved into each nation. So England has a different structure for health-related decisions to Wales, and Wales has a different structure to Scotland, and Scotland to Northern Ireland. So all of the four nations in the United Kingdom have a different approach to this. England is the only one that's announced this. Yeah. England's the only one that's announced this. So this is supporting, say, I think the number that was quoted on the news was 270,000 people with type 1 in England. So there's about 400,000-ish overall with the number quoted. So you're probably getting, you know, 270,000 to 300,000 of those are probably in England. And then the rest are then made up of Scotland, in Northern Ireland and Wales. So this is only announcement is only applicable in England. And it's across 5 years, which basically means they've got 5 years to get it to everybody with type 1 in England. So there's going to be some that get it in 2 weeks. There's going to be some that get it in 6 months, 1 year, 3 years. It really varies area by area. Your postcode, the hospital you're under, the contracts that the hospitals already have and the tariffs that they have with particular medical companies. It varies dramatically area to area. So there is amazing news, but there is now a period of time where understanding how that funding and that approach rolls out across England. And as a charity, I know I'm working for JDRF, there'll be a number of people that will reach out to JDRF for support and to try and understand when it might be or get advice on it. But equally, it's going to be speaking to healthcare professionals and understanding what that looks like in your area and what options you have for closed loop or hybrid closed loop technology, because it is in different forms as well. I use a particular type of system. There are other hybrid closed loop systems available through the NHS that I'm obviously not using, which might be in your area, might not be in your area. So it's super dependent on where you are, and difficult for me to put a definitive. I couldn't give a good steer on what that looks like. It's going to be case by case and area by area, really.
Mm. Do you have any clarity on or any idea around, would it have anything or I suppose, how would I phrase this? Like, would someone's management in any way dictate their ability to access it? As in, let's say someone's A1C is much higher than another person's, and essentially they're in a worse health state. Does that person get priority in any way? Like, how does that work? And I know that's a bit of a, it's a bit of a touchy one, because I specifically remember in, I don't know if this was the same in the UK, but I originally, when I think the first COVID vaccine came out and we were obviously all high risk, they had announced that people with an A1C above 7 would get the vaccine before those who had an A1C below 7. And I was speaking to a lot of people that had varied opinions on that type of process. But is there any indication as to, like, is that relevant? Is it?
The answer is yes, it is relevant. Okay. And criteria does exist for accessing hybrid closed loop. And as you're rightly pointing out, those that maybe have higher HbA1cs, therefore, if you like, to those in the healthcare professional industry would look like a potentially higher risk of becoming unwell or risks of complications with higher HbA1cs over a period of time, they are prioritised under this rollout amongst other criteria that which exists as well. Yeah, it does exist. You can find out about it through NICE, which is the kind of they're like a governing organisation for rollout of medication and use of technology across healthcare in the United Kingdom. So they're like they're like an overseeing organisation which will approve and recommend drugs, medications, technologies to be rolled out into the healthcare industry or healthcare profession. So you can easily Google what the criteria is. I'm not gonna put it on here for it to be debated under any of your social media comments. We'll leave it for people to go and find it themselves.
Good
and
idea.
Then they can debate it in other spaces, because it does exist. Criteria is applied for people to access it, and those that hit the criteria should get access to it sooner than those that don't hit it. But that isn't to say that people won't get it with type 1. Like I said, 5 years to get it to everybody with type 1 in England. So you might not get it in the first year because of the criteria, but it will end up coming round to everybody with type 1 under what is this strategy. That's the aim, is to get it to everyone with type 1 in England by 5 years' time. So you're just... priority list does exist based on criteria, and it may take longer. It might not. The best way to find out is to speak to the team that supports you with your condition.
Yeah. It's a funny one. It's an interesting one, because I remember speaking to people, and this comes from, again, the idea around this certain criteria that people were getting the vaccine earlier or whatever it might be. And I remember speaking to people and they were saying, well, if my A1C doesn't reach the criteria currently, but I'm prioritizing getting the vaccine earlier, can I increase my A1C so that I get the vaccine earlier? Which I obviously wouldn't agree with, because for me, it's like, look, you need to keep your health in the best place possible as soon as you can and for as long as you can. But it's, again, debatable too, in terms of there probably are some people that are struggling and would really benefit from a hybrid closed loop system earlier and be thinking, well, can I increase my A1C by another 0.5 to hit that criteria? You know, hopefully they don't. But it's an interesting one. That's what I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, no, completely. Can see it. I've heard it. you would hope people wouldn't, but equally that the criteria is there, and people can see what will get them higher up the list for getting a hybrid closed loop system. And once you've got it, you're in a better space, then obviously it's helping you. So difficult one, isn't it? Really difficult one.
Definitely
that.
Is.
And you can see why people make certain decisions about how they're operating for potential access to different medications and technologies.
Yeah.
You can understand it.
Of course. And for me, I think it just comes back to something that I like passionately believe in terms of, yes, having access to these types of things is fundamental to us improving our life over a long period of time, but also trying to put the power back into yourself, into your own management, and saying, look, if I get it in 6 months, fantastic. If it's a year, fantastic. If it's 5 years, fantastic. But I still need to keep the power in myself, knowing that, look, when it happens, and I just need to control what I can control at this point for my health and my well-being. That's always what I believe, because I've spoken to people who were diagnosed 35 years ago, who at the time were told there'll be a cure in 5 years. You're probably the same. So for me, it's always look, the advancements are happening. Hopefully this rollout for all types of people will happen sooner rather than later, but also it comes back to just control what you can control, because that's the most important thing. Something you said, Chris, earlier on was, and it's kind of when we were touching on when you're finger pricking, you're more almost in tune with your body, and it's a completely different experience compared to sensors, and it's a completely different way of living with your diabetes and learning about your diabetes. And you said you got a lot of teachings from life from that experience as a child and teenager, finger pricking as opposed to using a sensor or a hybrid closed loop system. From your experience, what sort of teachings from life have you gotten, or have you learned from or gained from, that you almost feel as if an 8-year-old today wouldn't gain from because of the technology advances?
It's a good question, and I think probably the key thing, the thing that really struck me when you said it, was don't sweat the little things. And I think that's something that is broadly applicable to quite a lot of life, but also really applicable to type 1 as well. So I wouldn't stress about the small things in my type 1 management, because I wasn't tapped into it all the time. I only needed to stress when it was a big thing, when there was a real hypo and I was really struggling, or my levels were really high and I was struggling to play football, and the things that really mattered, like that game each week was a big thing to me and a big deal. That was the thing that mattered, that I really wanted to do. So I didn't stress over the smaller things with type 1, which is when my level was 11 and 11.5 or 12, and easily corrected and brought in. It never emotionally impacted me in that way. I never, when it was slightly out of range, because I didn't really know it was slightly out of range, because I was in tune with my body. My body's only giving me signals at, say, below 4 and above 13 and a half or 14, say, when you start to feel, for me, the symptoms of hyperglycemia. So I never got emotionally attached to levels. They never really upset me. They because I was never that far in tune with it. I was never that connected to the numbers at my early point in my life, that I only sweated over the really problematic ones when it was properly high and when it was really low, because they're the ones that made me feel bad in life. They made me feel bad in my type 1. So I don't think that comes out now. I say I don't think it comes out. I don't know if it comes out enough. It probably does come out, but I don't think it comes out quite as much as the learning that I got early on, which allowed me to free up space and have less anxiety about type one, because I was in between 4 and 14 quite a lot of the time. So I obviously, because I didn't feel bad all of the time, so I must have been sat between 4 and 14 a fair bit, and I didn't sweat about where I was between 4 and 14. Whereas now, I have seen people that will sweat about being 8.5, and that really worries me. That is what we're teaching with data now, that you could stress about 8.5 when I left for 17 years. I was chuffed with being between 4 and 14, and I only sweated and worried when it was 17 or when it was 3.2 and going lower. It's a teaching which has allowed me to go and do life and focus on life, and, you know, touch wood, type 1 is in my world, and complications are at a real minimum 25 years in. So that for me is I think that's probably the key thing I would pull out of it. I don't know. That feels like the thing that struck me the most when you asked that question.
I'd agree with everything you said, because it goes back to what we were saying about how the tech itself can create further stress and further frustration. But I always try and take it back to, well, what's my relationship with the number that I see? What's my association with the number that I see? Because if we have a relationship or an association with like an 8 or an 8.5, and in our mind that tells us something, and it dictates the narrative that we have in our mind about our health and our diabetes, that in itself can frustrate us. Like, I like to be below 8.5, but when I am 8.5, it doesn't stress me out. Because I know, and that probably, Chris, there's my, again, my insulin alarm to take my basal insulin. There you go. That's two alarms now throughout the episode. But yeah, for me,
and there's me, I'm hybrid closed loop, and I'm just letting
exactly
this thing over there. It's just exactly sort of whatever's happening.
Yeah, you haven't even thought about your diabetes. The only reason you're thinking about it is because I'm asking you questions. But I feel it comes back to, again, much like what you said, probably my experience 10-ish years finger pricking, where even when you, and I specifically remember, even to this day, when I, because I finger prick still a good bit, when I finger prick and I see a higher number, you don't, well, I don't anyway, I don't have the same type of response with a high number on my blood glucose monitor than I would on a sensor. Because I think the difference between the two, it's like, well, if I see a 15 millimoles on my sensor, I also see the big spike and how long I've been high for and how long it takes for me to come back down in range. Whereas when you see a 15 with your blood glucose monitor, it's like, oh, okay, it's 15. I'll take 2-3 units correction and I'll forget about it. Whereas, again, we're touching on, I know we're probably repeating ourselves a lot in this episode, but it goes back to, well, I'm just constantly being reminded that I'm still up at 15. I'm now at 14. I'm now at 13. And for me, again, I'll never want to go back to just finger pricking, because the sensors and the tech is unbelievable. But it's important that for everybody, you're almost putting some thought into, how am I reacting to my blood sugar? Am I stressing unnecessarily? Do I have a narrative in my mind at that time that essentially is false, that I'm just kind of allowing turn into a bit of a spiral thought process? Because we can all find ourselves in that. But yeah, great answer. Great answer. Chris, I really, really enjoyed this, have to say. Like, really enjoyable conversation. I'm not surprised. I was looking forward to it. But as you know, there's a finishing question that we always like to ask a guest that's on the podcast. And I'm wondering, will your answer be different to your answer 4 years ago? But if you had to thank your diabetes for something, what would that be?
Yeah, I'm going to I can probably guess what I said 4 years ago.
Which was what? Remind us.
Well, it's guessing because I can't remember what I said 4 years ago. So I'm gonna say it might even be the same, but I think something like empathy and tuning into people around me, it's connections that I've been able to make, it's opportunities of connecting to great organizations, great people, doing great things to help others with the condition. I've been lucky to get involved in lots of different stuff, and without type 1 I wouldn't be doing all of it and having those great things going on. So I think it's probably that. It's those learnings and teachings and you know what we've just said about don't sweat the little things is probably a thing it's helped me throughout life. It's actually probably helped pushing myself forward in different ways and with different opportunities that have come up, whether that's jobs, careers, sport, because you don't sweat the small things. You really just look at holistic things and don't get stressed by little hiccups, because you're constantly getting sort of learnings about failure. Because type 1, you're almost failing from the moment you're given that diagnosis. Your levels are out of range. You're
failing every day.
Anything out of range is can be seen as a little mini failure. So you get good at dealing with mistakes and failure and coming back and bouncing back. And I think that bouncing back thing that type 1 has taught me, that's probably one of the greatest things that it's given me, and is that resilience piece. It's a relentless condition. It's always there. It's always making you fall. It's always tripping you up, and you've never got it perfect. You've never got it nailed on. But by doing that, it makes you resilient and an ability to bounce back and learn from mistakes and work on things for the better of life or an approach that you're taking. So I think that's probably the greatest thing it's taught me or given me.
Amazing. What an answer. Love it. Chris, you're a legend. I appreciate you coming on for the second time. Maybe 2028 will be the next episode that we do. four year intervals. We'll get you on the podcast.
It sounds like a World Cup interval every 4 years.
What's more important? Like... What's more important to the world?
Yeah, we're on a World Cup cycle or an Olympic cycle. We're just following the Olympics at the minute.
There you go.
So the World Cup. There we are.
The Olympics. The In Sloan podcast. The top three.
That's
well, Chris,
it.
Genuinely appreciate you coming on again. I know you're a busy man. You've a lot of things to do, and your insight and your experience is just incredibly valuable to myself and anybody else listening. So appreciate the work that you do and appreciate the insight and how you share everything so openly. You're a credit to yourself and just a huge asset to everybody living with diabetes globally. So thank you.
No, I appreciate you. Appreciate all the work that you do as well, Owen. The podcast, brilliant. It's, you know, years of work and effort into it. And I know lots of people listen to it and lots of people I know listen to it. So, yeah, just echoing my thanks to you for all the efforts you do in the community as well to get great knowledge out there and the work that you do. And, yeah, really appreciate coming back on. Hopefully it's not 4 years till I can come back on. And equally, I thought we were going to talk on other subjects today, and we've managed to talk just completely on tech, which is amazing to have to talk about just tech. But there's so many other things as well that hopefully, if we don't leave it 4 years, I can come and chat to you about as well again. So, yeah, thanks for having me on, mate, and look forward to the next time.
100%. I appreciate it. And I know there were a couple of different things we were supposed to talk about, but we just kept getting deeper and deeper into that conversation, which I loved, and huge insight. So appreciate it. And more excuse or more reason to get you on sooner than the 4 year mark. Right. Chris, appreciate it. Look after yourself, and I look forward to staying in touch and chat to you soon.
Cheers, Owen.
Another massive thank you to today's guest. And if you haven't already, be sure to check out their social channels and links that we've included in the episode description. If you enjoy the podcast, which I'm guessing you do because you listen, be sure to rate, subscribe, and share. It really, really helps the podcast get heard by more people when you rate, when you subscribe, and when you share. If you feel that you've been able to benefit from it so far, likely someone else would be too. If you have any questions or stories for myself and Graham, please do not hesitate to reach out. We absolutely love getting in the email stories and questions. You can do this through theinsalonepodcast@gmail.com. And if you would like to learn more from me, stay connected, or even work with me and other people living with type 1 diabetes who want to be fitter, healthier, and happier within my Type 1% Better online program, you can message me directly through Instagram, or you can fill out an application form through the link in the podcast description. And as always, another massive thank you to you for your time and your ears. We greatly appreciate you showing up each week, time after time, ready to gain knowledge and confidence around your diabetes management. So until next week, have a good day, have a good week, look after those blood sugars, and I'll chat to you soon. Take it easy.